You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by 2020. You know that stock photography look you hate? Like how all the models have those creepy, dead-behind-the-eyes smiles? 2020 lets you buy millions of intimate, authentic, real-world photos. They look like they came from someone's social media account you're jealous of, and they're proven to increase your brand's image. You get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20, then the number 2 and the number 0.com/onbrand to get your first 5 photos free.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Tom Peters. Tom is a leading business management guru and founder of the Tom Peters Company. He continues to be in constant demand for lectures and seminars. In 2017, he received a Lifetime Achievement Award from Thinkers 50 and the Jack Covert Award for contribution to the business book industry from 1-800-CEO-READ. Peters is the best-selling author of 17 books, including In Search of Excellence with Robert H. Waterman Jr., which is often cited as among the best business books ever written. Arriving at an equally troubling time, his latest book, The Excellence Dividend, is a self-described sequel of sorts to this modern business classic. Tom, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you, Nick. It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, I have to tell you that I don't know if this is a frequent occurrence, but I feel like in the business community, you're definitely one of my heroes. You know, I'm a Star Trek fan, a Star Wars fan, and I think, you know, on par with meeting someone like Captain Kirk, this is one of those moments for me. Your books have inspired me throughout my career, and I am thrilled to be here talking with you about your latest book, The Excellence Dividend.
Well, listen, before we do that, I want to make sure we've got a tape of you comparing me to talking to Captain Kirk. I mean, this is a life highlight that you've just given me.
Well, and for the record, I have not yet spoken to any of the Captain Kirks out there, but should they want to discuss brands today, the invitation stands.
All right. That sounds good.
So, you know, I was thinking and kind of over the past couple of weeks as I knew we were about to talk, and I have had the chance to read almost all of The Excellence Dividend. But in thinking about this and in looking at your other books, your audio books, I think are a special treat. And it could sound like an odd question, but...
Good. That's a good start.
So, why another book? How many books have you authored or co-authored at this point?
I think something like 17. I've heard various people use various numbers, and I haven't counted, but I think we're in that neighborhood. Well, I think the answer is that there are significant consistencies, actually, despite the passage of time, among all the books. And, you know, the real answer is the stuff that I talk about and have talked about for 35 years does not require a PhD in material science from MIT to understand. And when we talk about putting people first and the like, why should I have to keep saying it? Well, people just aren't implementing, and I get furious and angry. And every 5 years, I think I'm going to just throw another set of rocks at people and see if I can wake them up. So it's funny. years ago, Warren Bennis wrote a book on leadership, and I was really moved by one thing he said. He said, nobody wants to be a leader. They have to be a leader. They need desperately in their interior to get something done. And the only way they can do that is to take on an organizational challenge or responsibility. Well, I'm sort of the same way. You know, the stuff we talk about is by and large pretty straightforward, and yet you don't see it implemented with any degree of regularity. And so, you know, as I said, every 60 months or something like that, I've just had it up to my eyeballs, and I sit down and write another damn book that says, do your managing by wandering around.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in thinking back about In Search of Excellence, The Pursuit of Wow, and then diving into this, it's consistent with that same thinking. But to that point, we haven't gotten it. And if anything, and I feel like you say this in the introduction, it almost feels somehow, not only have we not gotten it, but it feels more applicable to what we're facing when it comes to rising tech, different trends.
Absolutely.
There.
Well, you know, the classic example of that is the 1999 book, Brand You, which, you know, all I'm doing is repeating exactly what you just said. The brand you idea in 1999 was a good thing to do. Now, 19 years later in 2018, it is a survival necessity. And I think that's what you're saying, and I'm just repeating your words. But there is that, the sense of urgency, the sense of, oh my God, we've got to do it, has definitely gone up. I mean, you know that better than I. You're the digital marketing guru.
Well, and it's interesting you talk about Brand You. I just I have a book coming out myself called Brand Now, and one of the chapters is about personal branding, and I reference Brand You, and to me that's kind of my hitting the head against the desk or the wall or whatever blunt surface is nearby, because that's one that it seems like people really, for whatever reason, people as brands is misunderstood still.
Oh my God, yes. You know, I have a chapter on it again in this book, and the number one reason for having the chapter is what I think I blame nobody but myself. If somebody reads something you write and they do the wrong thing, it's the writer's fault, not the implementer's fault. And the Brand You stuff appeared in Fast Company magazine, and the cover had a takeoff on a box of Tide with its bright orange and black circles or what have you. And you could make the translation that Brand You is simply about egocentrically jamming yourself down other people's throats. Well, the real essence of Brand You is you have to be someone that other people want to work with. So it's not only being fabulous at what you do and not only being different than other people at what you do, but the fact that, you know, we say at the end of the day, we say, Nick, I was with a project on Nick, and you would not believe the attention he gave to detail. You would not believe that he helped his teammates even when he was busy. And that's the all important last 80% is how do you behave as a member of a larger set of people. So Brand You is not egocentric. Brand You is, in fact, the essence of teamwork to have a reputation. You know, I call it the difference between, this is ridiculous, sucking up and sucking sideways. In a hierarchical organization, we were all taught to suck up to survive. Now it's sucking sideways, which means having this horizontal network of people and experiences. That's what you call upon for success now.
Well, I think you hit on it too, that it's sort of perceived somewhat as this egocentric vanity exercise, and
right.
That it's somehow in conflict, individuals as personal brands with larger organizational brands as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Could not agree more wholeheartedly. I mean, the simple description that I believe I gave in the book in 1999 is I went back to an earlier era where you were wearing a badge in a Hewlett-Packard division. And yes, it had your name on it, but it also had at the top number 129, which was your employee number. And I said, you can no longer survive as number 129. You have to be an individual with a name who stands for something. And that is the part of it that has to do with the skill and the learning and the growth. But that doesn't do you any good without, again, the reputation with your peers and your reputation with the people who have signed you up to do jobs. But yeah, and that's well, I don't know, Nick, you're the expert. We say that, you know, a brand that's tied at some level, and we are, you know, we argue more about this than, or not argue, talk about this more than we used to. We need we need an emotional tie. It has to be more than something great that has a wonderful bright red logo, bright orange logo on it.
Well, and then that tie comes from the people, right? The people that are a part of the brand.
Yep.
You know, that makes me think of the passage early on when you're talking about in the new book, The Excellence Dividend, when you talk about culture and you talk about Burger King. And one of the many favorite terms I have in this book is give a shit-ism about individuals wanting to give more of a shit about the business itself.
Yeah, well, we're on the same page on that one. I was just doing an interview with radio and they told me I couldn't say that. So I'm delighted to be here with you and being able to say that and actually listen to you saying it. Because, you know, I realize, you know, it's not the right words for some people, but it's accurate. It's, and the guy who said it, Barry Gibbons, who was the CEO of Burger King, said, I didn't, and I love the first words, I didn't have a vision at Burger King. What I wanted was 250,000 employees from accounting to the shop itself who gave a shit. And, you know, that's just, you know, for whatever, and it may be my faults, but that's as close to a perfect definition as I've ever heard.
You know, you talk about that and so much of the, I don't know if it's a bad rap that strategy gets, but at the very least, it's a fair rap, I think, with being top heavy and not always focused on moving in the right direction and taking action. You reminded me of a great quote that if I knew, I forgot about from Omar Bradley on strategy versus execution versus logistics. Why is that one still so hard for us?
Well, I start the book off with, and I'm going to come back to General Bradley. I start the book off with a quote from Conrad Hilton. And at some gala, he was asked, Mr. Hilton, would you please share your secrets, as in plural, your secrets of success? So Hilton gets up in front of a group of grandees and waggles his finger at them and says, don't forget to tuck the shower curtain into the bathtub. And with that, he turns and walks off the stage. And it's the notion, which is the way I talk about it in speeches, that I come to your hotel for location, 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 but I come back to your hotel for the tucked in shower curtains. And Bradley is saying the same thing. He says, amateurs talk about strategy, professionals talk about logistics. And I think for a long period of time, particularly in the business schools and the consultancies, we got far too focused on developing the plan and not focused enough on the minute-to-minute, day-to-day, second-to-second actions associated with execution.
And it's interesting, too. You talk about B-schools and consultancies, and I'm very familiar with your work, but where I've found myself in my career now includes, it was not this way when I first started my career. Now I find myself both consulting and teaching in a business school. Yeah. And I'm looking at these mandates, and it seems like we, especially in those very big institutions, have some trouble with that advice. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's that strategy feels more cohesively like a thing to teach and hang your hat
one,
on.
One part of it is, I remember my thesis advisor at Stanford, and he said, when they come to the business school as a 26-year-old, all they want is strategy, marketing, and finance. When they come back is to executive education at the age of 40, all they want is people, culture, and organization effectiveness. That is, they've had to really deal with these problems. But I'm on a campaign. It's not doing me any good whatsoever, but I'm still on the campaign. And that is, I want the MBA to be changed from Master of Business Administration to Master of Business Arts, because it really is an artistic adventure that has to do with the excellence of the experience with the product or service, that has to do with the excellence of the people who are in fact providing the product or service. But it's, you know, as much about a philosophy degree or a history degree as it is about being able to add one and one and regularly get two. The numbers are the least of it. You know, we said that, I've said you could summarize my first book in six words. And the six words were, hard is soft, soft is hard. It's the numbers and the plans that are soft. I mean, look at the way we fiddled with numbers to create the 2008 crisis. And what's hard are the relationships in the culture. That's the bedrock on which the effectiveness of the organization is built.
You know, that's so interesting to think of. And you mentioned hard is soft, soft is hard. It makes me think of what you also talk about in the book is the soft stuff. And I don't know why we short sheet that so much, both in terms of education and what we're teaching, but also what we reinforce day in and day out too.
Well, listen, I'm gonna read you a paragraph, if I may do that,
please,
because I just came across it. Unfortunately, I read the paragraph after the book was published, or not published, but after the book was written. And I almost held up the presses so I could put it in. But this is just fascinating. When we really think about hard, presumably the first kinds of names that come to mind are Google. But this comes from an article in December of 2017 in the Washington Post. Project Oxygen data from founding in 1998 to 2013 shocked everyone at Google by concluding that among the eight most important qualities of Google's top employees, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, STEM expertise comes in dead last. The seven top characteristics of success at Google are all soft skills: being a good coach, communicating and listening well, possessing insights into others, including others' different values and points of view, having empathy toward and being supportive of one's colleagues, being a good critical thinker and problem solver, and being able to make connections across complex ideas. These traits sound more like what one gets as an English or theater major than as a programmer. And they go on to say more and more about this. But, you know, it's the last place in the world where you would have thought STEM came in last. But even in the Google world, and they went on and had another project which says the most creative projects, you know, they talk about A players and B players. They say the most creative projects come from B players who don't think they're the smartest people in the world, who are therefore willing to listen to each other and play as team members.
Tom, are you
so that's a holy smoke story to me.
Yeah, and also it hits home for me. You're saying that my theater arts degree is relevant.
You're damn right, Nick. I mean, we're going to switch places here because I have an engineering degree and an MBA, which are obviously completely useless since they're STEM degrees, and you've got the theater arts degrees, so you're in charge, and I will, you know, exit right.
Well, that's...
No, I think, but it's not a joke. Years and years ago, the great Canadian organization researcher Henry Mintzberg revealed some research, and it was fascinating. Professional degree, people get professional degrees, engineering, science, et cetera, when they come out of school, get two or three times more job offers than you theater arts degree people, two or three times True. More job offers at 50% or more higher starting salary, comma, at year 20. The theater arts degree holders have long passed the people from the professional schools. They are more senior in the organization and, in fact, have got more responsibility, more pay, and so on. Because, again, obviously, as you go up a hierarchy, life becomes more artistic. Mintzberg wasn't quite willing to give you a pass with your theater arts degree. He said philosophy majors were his choice.
Right.
And in fact, something else, just to continue this which I think is fabulous. This was, you know, article I read you about the Google thing. This line was in there, too. Technology billionaire, venture capitalist and Shark Tank TV personality Mark Cuban looks for philosophy majors when he's investing in sharks most likely to succeed. So you really are in the right. But isn't it fascinating that we're saying that's more true today than in the past? I mean, I think it's utterly just it's intriguing and mind altering. And even if you don't buy it, and I don't mean you, Nick, but even if a senior person in an organization doesn't buy it, they sure as hell ought to stop, take several deep breaths and think about the consequences of it. It's a big deal.
Well, and it's interesting, too, in contrast to where we do focus. And I think, you know, we don't look at insights like that, or it makes me think of the kind of file drawer phenomenon. It doesn't reinforce what we think about,
right.
You know, whether it's STEM, whether it's strategy, whether it's anything that we kind of treat as sacred cows that may not be as sacred as we think.
Yeah, well, and I think that's, you know, again, particularly true in Silicon Valley, and you could argue that that's not inconsistent with some of the problems that Mr. Zuckerberg and his colleagues at Facebook are now having. You know, they created with incredible coding skills this amazing monster institution, which, you know, processes connections between people, but they didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what the moral or political or social consequences could be. They just took the which is kind of a strategy thing, they took the more is better line. If we have a jillion
yeah.
people, it's better than having a half a jillion people all stop. And the reality is that once you have a billion people or what have you, you are dead center in the middle of the social and political milieu of society, and you got to start thinking about other stuff.
Well, I think it's directly related to the earlier conversation too about what is the hard stuff and what's
right,
the
exactly.
what's the soft stuff, because I think
yep.
we'd initially think, oh, getting to the billions of people is the hard stuff, and I think the long term, where they're at right now, this inflection point is the real hard stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. My friend Rich Karlgaard, I don't know whether you read the book, who was a Forbes publisher, wrote a book called The Soft Edge. And it was about this same stuff. But the reason I bring it up, which, you know, is consistent with what we were just saying, or what you were just saying a minute ago, is not only are the Zuckerbergs of the world focused on the numbers of connections, but the bankers who are funding them, don't go any further either. And as Rich said, the kind of people who are in venture capital partners and so on tend to be the people who are the math people and the finance people. And they have shortfalls on this arena, too.
Well, and
so what are you going to do about it, Nick?
Oh, good Lord.
You're younger than I am. Let's switch this interview around, and I will have an interview of you. What the hell are you going to do about it?
Well, I think, though I do consult and teach in a business school, I also focus on the soft stuff. So it tells me that I'm in an okay spot.
Yeah, I think so. Here's the twist, I would add, because I spend the winters in New Zealand, lucky me,
yeah,
and spend some time at the business school. And, you know, I think Harvard did this after the dot-com crash or something. Somebody gave them $1 jillion, and so they did an ethics course. Well, to me, what we're talking about is putting these sensibilities into every course. They should be part of a marketing course. They should be part of a finance course. It's not, oh, let's tack on the ethics thing and, you know, bring some retired Catholic priest into the school to lecture us on that. It's somehow it ought to be a piece of every case study. I'm not ready to throw the business schools off the cliff at all. And I think it's fabulous that you're teaching. I just think we really need to bring a very significant sensibility to bear.
Yeah. And it's like that standalone course that kind of checks the box instead of looking at
how
these domains integrate across everything. Your Zuckerberg commentary, I would point people to, because I think it's the right direction. And it reminded me, as I was traveling actually to teach a workshop for the business college this past weekend, I listened to, I think it was one of your audiobooks, and you talked about leadership, and you talked about FDR and Churchill, and talked about FDR being a lousy economist and Churchill being a not so great military strategist. But what they did, what ultimately helped them succeed, was the hard stuff that is really the soft stuff of leadership.
Yeah, this Darkest Hour movie that came out about Churchill, he made the British believe in themselves. You know, that was the key. They believed they were pummeled. They believed that they were down. It was that, what's the da-da-da and carry on? I can't remember now. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Keep calm.
Sorry. I'm so wrapped up in this interview that I can't remember simple stuff. Keep calm and carry on. And that was essentially what Churchill did. And of course, Mr. Roosevelt, too, with we have... I wish I could copy his patrician New York accent, but I'm just a boy from Tidewater, Maryland. But it was, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And he did have a wonderful accent for that. I mean, it was like the voice of God coming across. But so it's almost as if people did, you know, get up from their beds and start to walk and started to smile. And it's just awesome. Obviously, such things can be used for ill as well, that Hitlers of the world who were damn good speakers, but, you know, needless to say, caused untold harm.
Well, would definitely be worth renting The Darkest Hour for Mr. Zuckerberg. I've seen it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. Absolutely. Maybe, you know, it's not that expensive. I'd go in 50-50.
Right. Okay.
You.
Okay.
Kate will get your address. She's running the publicity, and I will send you a check for about $9
Perfect.
In the mail. Does that
it's
sound
a plan.
Right?
It's a plan. We'll make sure it gets to his people.
Absolutely. Well, there's the problem. His people.
Yeah, I realize
that. Imagine that he is surrounded by this point by about 11 layers of lawyers for starters.
Oh,
I was so furious long before this latest bout started. I was so furious about 6 or 7 months ago when Facebook and Google and a handful of others were called to testify in front of Congress, and they all sent their lawyers. I mean, as an American citizen, that is an insult to the democracy of my country. You know, you are welcome to think that your congressman is a clown or some other congressman is a clown, but it is my country and it was my Constitution and it is my United States Congress. And in terms of those people, even though I might vote one out or send money against another, you owe it. You're right. It's your requirement as a citizen to behave better. I was so pissed.
Yeah, yeah. And just the whole, it's the antithesis of everything we were just talking about, because like Zuckerberg just kind of revealed himself this past week in crisis. And it's like, if that's how unavailable you are, not a great state.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost here. I'm going to get in trouble when I say this, so I should probably keep my mouth shut. It was, you know, you should have listened to what your parents taught you, or we hope your parents taught you.
Exactly. All right, Tom, I am thankful that you're still mad as hell enough to keep writing books, and hopefully we'll get the idea across. Before we wrap up, I do have to ask if there is a brand, as we always ask on this show, that has made you smile recently.
I have a pat answer, but you're going to go, there will be silence for a second. Because I want to see, yes. Well, no, it's not a brand. All I know is I don't know who makes it. Oh gosh. Okay. So I'm going to have to come up with something else. Well, I think I will stick with Old Faithful.
Oh.
When I had my 60th birthday, one of my partners put together a book that had letters from various people to me. And he had a letter. And at this event, he was asked to stand up and read his letter. His entire letter was about how much I loved Ziploc bags. And so my vote is going to go, and I bet in all the years you've done this or will do it, you'll never have the same vote again. Ziplocs. You could use them for 8,000 reasons. I even like the sound. You know, when you get the mouth of it to click correctly together, and you know that you've – when I wrote something about them in the new book. But, you know, here is Steve Jobs. And I know things have gotten, you know, different in terms of technology. Steve Jobs designs this awesome phone. He sells me the phone for several hundred dollars. I have it in my pocket during a rainstorm in New Zealand that was unexpected. It gets soaking wet. I look at every YouTube video I can about putting rice in with it and so on. I can never fix the damn thing. I still have my iPhone, but I now carry it around in a Ziploc bag. I mean, how sweet is that? If that doesn't get a smile from you, I don't know what will.
I love it. I love it all. It's great mini stories, and I love the sound point too, because
absolutely
great brands engage all the senses.
That's exactly right.
Well, Tom, and
if we had a slightly more sensitive audio system here, I would grab a Ziploc out of my backpack and I would click it for your fans on the other end. But at any rate, we'll both have to imagine that.
Yeah, we'll have to add that in post-production.
Absolutely.
Tom.
Well, listen, it's been great, Nick. I really have appreciated it.
Thank you. And for folks that want to go to learn more about what you're up to, where would you point them?
Well, I would point them to one of a million places where you can order online Excellence Dividend, The Excellence Dividend, anytime. No, TomPeters.com and ExcellenceNow.com. At TomPeters.com, we've got the last 15 years of my work, and it's all free because our goal in life is to have people use it, and therefore our approach in life is give it away.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all
of that. Well, we will charge for the book, I must admit.
Yes.
My publisher insists upon it.
Well, we'll link up to all of that in our show notes. Tom, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Great. My pleasure. Thanks.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. And this week, I want to give a shout out to our past guest who got the ball rolling on this Tom Peters interview today. My third guest ever in the history of the show was Dory Clark, author of Reinventing You, Stand Out, lots of great books. Actually, speaking of personal branding and a brand called You, a lot of great personal branding resources. But it was Dory who said, "Have you talked with Tom Peters?" And I said, "I would love to. How do I make that happen?" Dory made some connections. I made a few, air quotes, persistent emails. And a few years later, here we are. Dory, thank you for being such a great fan, guest, and advocate of the show. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag #OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Thanks again to our sponsor, 2020, your source for on-brand photography for your brand. Get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20, then the number 20, .com/onbrand. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this episode, at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Hey, speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.